Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Conversations on life, style, beauty, and relationships. It's the Velvet's Edge podcast with Kelly Henderson.
Katie Horwich is here. She is a writer, speaker, mindset coach, and women's empowerment activist. She is the founder of WANT, Women Against Negative Talk, a platform that gives women tools, tips, motivation, an inspiration to move forward in their lives fearlessly by shifting their negative self-talk patterns. She is also the host of WANTcast, the Women Against Negative Talk podcast, and now an author of the book WANT Yourself, Shift Your Self-Talk. Where is that? Yeah, Shift Your Self-Talk and Unearth the Strength in Who You Were All Along. There we go.
There we go.
Sorry for that little iffy intro there, but hi, Katie. Thank you for being here.
Are you kidding? I thought it was a wonderful intro. It's a mouthful because, you know, it's a big subject, which is why I
is a big subject.
Wrote a book on it instead of making an Instagram post and calling it a day.
Yes. Well, we were talking before the podcast, and the theme this month here on Velvet's Edge is cobwebs. We pick a word every month, and we picked the word cobwebs. Obviously, it's October, spooky season, so there's a lot of different meanings there. But you are the perfect guest for me for this topic because, as you mentioned, negative self-talk, it's a huge topic, right? But to me, it's also the thing that just kind of lurks in the shadows. Like, it's the thing driving most things that we do, yet we don't even know that it exists, right?
100%. It's like, you know, what's so funny is that throughout not just my work of, you know, 15 years or so studying and researching and generally obsessing over self-talk, especially during this book process and this book, media process, there have been people who have said, you know, I actually thought that I didn't have negative self-talk anymore. And so I thought, well, this doesn't apply to me. And then as they got into the work, they realized, oh, wow, I actually have more of that in me than I thought I did. And when people say that, I sort of say, that's amazing if you don't feel like negative self-talk runs your life. But to say that you have no negative self-talk, so to speak, is kind of like saying, well, I never get tired. You're human. You're not a robot. You're going to get tired, which, you know, in this case, you are a human, not a robot. So you're going to have all different types of self-talk that comes up, but you are so right that it really can be so deceptive and so sneaky and be lurking in the background of our consciousness. And sometimes that can come out in ways that we don't expect, in really harmful ways.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because in Want Yourself, you dive into ways to shift your negative self-talk patterns. But this is more than just speaking nicely to yourself, right? Can you talk about the difference there?
Yeah. So there is some research that I am just completely obsessed with that I put right at the beginning of the book. There was this study that was done with two different groups of people. One group had pre-existing low self-esteem, and then the other group had pre-existing high self-esteem. And both of the groups thought that positive, they were calling it in the study, positive self-statements, what we might think of as positive affirmations or positive self-talk. Both of them believed, okay, these work wonders. And so they gave each of the groups pieces of positive self-statements to repeat to themselves. And what they noticed over time is that the people who had pre-existing high self-esteem, it actually kept them there or made them feel better. And the people who had low self-esteem, it actually made them feel worse, because what was going on was a form of cognitive dissonance where they felt like they were lying to themselves. And then they had feelings about those feelings. So that, combined with the fact that not everybody's negative self-talk or self-talk in general, let's forget about negative for a second, not everybody's self-talk actually shows up as talk and words to begin with. Some people experience it through like visuals. They'll say it's like a movie playing out in their mind, or they have these abstract feelings. If you put those two together, then it's sort of like a, oh, I understand now why maybe I have been saying these so-called positive things to myself and they haven't been making a difference in my life, because maybe that isn't where you were even starting. And even if you were starting with words, then maybe you weren't in a place where you had that seed of belief in what you're saying to actually take it forward. So I like to get behind the talk, which is symptomatic, and get to the bottom of the self part of the equation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say, it's so interesting, because the people with the low self-esteem, it's almost as if it was creating this like shame spiral internally that they weren't even aware of.
Totally. 1000%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how were they catching that in the moment? Like, if, or how did y'all figure that out, I guess? Or in that study, how did they figure it out?
Yeah. In the study, the way that they figured it out is sort of like taking stock of like, okay, well, how are these people feeling about themselves? And I reference the study in the book, and people can read like the pages and pages of it. But you know, it's so interesting, because when you mentioned the shame spiral, I kind of want to double click into that.
Yeah.
It made me think about myself and my own life and the people that I work with, who are usually very, not only high achievers, but they're people who are already somewhat familiar with this type of, let's just call it, mindset work. And so what can happen is we can get these narratives that develop of, well, I should be over this by now. I thought that I was past this. Mm-hmm. And then there's, like you said, that sort of shame spiral that comes in that is going to take you along. Like, I think of a roller coaster. It's going to take you on that ride the second that you decide to dip your toe into it. Because we are hardwired to recognize the things that feel dangerous or not, or incongruent to us. We're hardwired to see those things. And so of course we're going to have feelings about them when those times come up. It's just, it's more about what we do with those feelings. That's what matters, versus how we feel about, well, I thought that I should be over, I was over this by now, and I'm not, you know?
Right. Totally. And the other thing I hear you saying, it's just like pinging the word awareness in my mind, because I know you say, because self-talk isn't positive or negative, it's the story you're telling yourself. So you have to start there, right? And I think so much of those shame spirals are, I know this from my experience with them, I guess, it's like, I want to attach to the feeling, like you're saying, like, I feel terrible right now. But isn't it such a thing that if you're actually just recognizing it, like the awareness, like, oh, look how I'm doing that thing again. Like, that's the first step, right?
100%. I think that just paying attention, I mean, paying attention and getting curious, I believe that it could make so much change happen in the world. However, that can be really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then there's also, you know, there's this idea that we should be able to, first of all, we should be able to pay attention, like it's easy to, and that we should be able to flip the switch right in the moment and just jump straight to the story that you want to write over whatever you're saying. But if we are going with the framework of self-talk is inherently neither good or bad, it's information. It's actually about not just about paying attention about when this stuff comes up in us, but going and digging and figuring out, okay, well, what's underneath this? Mm. And there might be some tough information under there, but if we go into our own relationship with ourself, like we would go into a relationship with anybody who we love and care for deeply in our lives. And, you know, I don't know about you or people listening, but for me, with the people that I care deeply about in their lives, when they're telling me things, I want to say, tell me more. Like, let's talk. Let's dig in. Let's dig in if you're ready. I'm not going to bypass their emotions. I'm not going to tell them to just think positive when they're in a really, really tough place. If we're able to take that type of relationship that we have with others and turn it back on ourselves, I mean, imagine the change that could happen.
Right. Right. Well, let's talk a little bit. You mentioned earlier the woman that said to you, well, I just didn't think that I had any negative self-talk. So let's actually talk about maybe what is self-talk and how do you shift that? So maybe could you give us some examples of things that you've heard or that people may not be even recognizing within themselves, and then tell us some ways to start shifting it?
Yeah. So I love that question, because I will also say when I first started, I mean, I thought of the idea for WANT, which is my platform, Women Against Negative Talk. I thought of that back in 2007 initially. And even, you know, there was a little lag, there was a little break. I sort of went onto the back burner of my life for a while, and I brought it back in 2015. 2015, this phrase, self-talk, was something that a lot of people weren't actually familiar with. So I describe self-talk as the story that we tell ourselves 24/7 as we walk through the world. And that's the story of who we believe ourselves to be and how we sort of belong in the world in general. So what that story does is it informs what we do next and next and next and next. So self-talk could be everything from positive to negative to completely neutral. A lot of people jump straight to the positives or the negatives, but I think it's worthwhile to recognize that our self-talk story is going on all of the time. And it can be objective, right? It could be, oh, I think I am going to go to the market right now, or I want to go outside. Like, we don't think of that as self-talk. But if those are the words that, if you're an internal monologue person like I am, yes, just the words that are in your brain, or the visuals that you're having, that's your self-talk. But what we pay attention to usually is the positive or negative self-talk, particularly the negative self-talk. So negative self-talk is sort of where I say the self-talk story takes a dark turn. It's where the story is one that belittles us, demeans us, makes us feel small, and keeps us in a reactive state versus a proactive state. So everything from I'm not good enough, smart enough, talented enough, I'm not enough is a big one that many people struggle with. Or, you know, taking an example, a very recent example from my own life, I did for my book launch here in New York City, I did a cabaret. And I sang, I performed, it was so much fun. I have not performed like that on a stage professionally for a very, very long time. And, you know, I've been doing this work for a really long time, so I was able to catch it really quickly. But when I first thought of the idea of maybe I want to do a book launch cabaret, there was a thought that came in of, well, I haven't sung on a stage in like almost 15 years. Like, am I allowed to do that? I'm an author. I'm a coach. I do all of these things. I'm not a performer, air quotes. And then I was able to catch that and be like, okay, cool. You're feeling uncomfortable. And you're also feeling that excitement around it. And you don't really know how to reconcile the two. And so that's what's coming up. I was able to recognize that really fast because I've been doing this for a really, really, really long time. Mm-hmm. But there's stuff that comes up like that every day for people that makes us believe that we are ready or not ready or good enough or not good enough for whatever situation. It can be as small as going, I don't know, walking down the street and giving somebody a compliment and then being like in your head, oh, that was so weird. Mm-hmm. I made that so awkward. Because you feel uncomfortable because maybe you were in a newer, vulnerable situation. So right. Self-talk and negative self-talk, like you said at the very beginning, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head. It is, these are cobwebs that just are in the backgrounds of our lives. And much like cobwebs or spider webs, sometimes you don't always see that they are there.
Right. I was just thinking when you were talking about that story of like even running into the person on the street, it's those things that we have in our head, right? Like the thing that you believe about yourself. And maybe you're like, oh no, this isn't true. Or like, let's say you're getting into a new relationship. You have a narrative about relationships. So it's like, you're happy, you're happy, you're happy. And then that one thing happens, right? And you're like, see, I knew you were just like every other man. Like it's that stuff that's constantly going on. I'm actually starting to recognize some of those things in my life after a decade of therapy. You know, like it's like these things are so sneaky and subtle sometimes that you just don't fully have the awareness. But I love what the book talks about because you really dove into how much of this is really connected to like our relationship with ourselves and the knowledge of, you know, the narratives going on, but also just how much we like ourselves, know ourselves. And you describe it as self-like versus self-love and kind of talk about those differences. So there was one quote I wanted to say. You said, what holds us back from the idea of true self-love is the idea that we're supposed to love ourselves 100% of the time, because chances are that's not going to be the case. And I want to really just talk about what are the differences and then how do we learn to have this kind of unconditional love that maybe we offer other people, but we really seem to struggle as humans to offer ourselves.
Yeah. I love talking about the difference between self-like and self-love because, you know, we are told many times that we've just got to love ourselves for exactly who we are. But that's really, really hard when we haven't been taught that it is okay to both love yourself and not like parts of, you know, parts of yourself, parts of how you're showing up. We conflate the two and we think, well, if I don't like how I'm acting or how I'm feeling right now, I don't like parts of my body, whatever it is, that must mean that I don't love myself. But I always suggest to people to think of someone or some entity. I always think of my dog, Frankie. Think of someone in your life who you would say, oh yeah, I love them unconditionally. Mm. And then you think about it and you think, okay, well, do I always like how they're acting? Do I always agree with their choices? Am I never once annoyed with them? Mm. I mean, if we're taking it, it sounds maybe like a silly example, but it's actually, I think, especially if you're a person who has a dog or a cat, that you have that unconditional love for it, it actually can make this even more clear that, yeah, sometimes my dog's barking annoys me. Sometimes I don't like that she's doing something. I love her so unconditionally. And why aren't we using that unconditional love lens on ourselves as well? Because we are also in a relationship with ourselves. And so if you think about how you build unconditional love with someone, you don't just say, you know, okay, I met you and I love you unconditionally. I think that the times where I have heard that happen, it's, you know, in a situation where it's a parent with their child. But let's say that you have someone that you are dating, right? You are going to go through a process with them of learning who they are and getting curious and figuring out like what makes them tick. And then you're going to start to develop that connection with that person. And then you're going to start to develop that respect and that trust throughout time. And all of a sudden, one day you're like, wow, I love this person unconditionally. So it does take time. And if you're taking that same framework and turning it back onto yourself, really hard to love yourself unconditionally if you haven't spent time getting to know who you are and finding yourself underneath all of the cobwebs to begin with. So it's why I believe that that's towards the beginning of the book. I really wanted to give people, I give them a framework of first, I tell them like, here's why you need a sense of self. And then the book takes you through this roadmap of finding yourself, being yourself, staying yourself and wanting yourself. And that finding yourself part. A lot of people think that it's a search out there, but it's actually a dig in here. And I believe that I actually talk about that part in the same breath that I talk about self-love and self-like in the book. Because that is the base of the majority of the unconditional love in our lives.
If you know anything about me, you know I am a massive creature of comfort. It is one of my top priorities in life to make my surroundings comfortable at all times. So when I found Cozy Earth, I quickly scooped up all of the luxurious bedding and loungewear that I could. It felt very on brand for me, but then I went on a trip with a girlfriend not too long ago where she could not stop commenting on how cute and comfy my pajamas were, which then made me realize they may also be my new favorite travel companion as well. Guys, I am not kidding when I say you will experience unmatched softness and smoothness with all of Cozy Earth's products. The temperature-regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew add comfort and a touch of style to any travel ensemble, and their bedding comes in the most adorable totes, making it a super easy gift to give anyone. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code VELVETSEDGE at the checkout for an exclusive 35% off and let them know we sent you when you're at the checkout.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance. Helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too.
So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Well, you did the perfect transition for me because I wanted to move to those four pillars that you talk about, the four steps of self. Will you explain a little more about each one? I know you did just kind of dive into the finding. What does that look like though? Like, I always love to give the listeners tangible tips, and it's like, okay, finding yourself, that sounds overwhelming to me. Like, that seems like you need to go on an eat, pray, love journey. You need to like be able to, you know, have that kind of experience and aha, there I am. But what does it actually look like?
Right. It's sort of like when people say, just like, be true to yourself, know yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. Sure. And then, you know, it's such a simple phrase that, again, we think that there's something wrong with us, that we can't just know ourselves or love ourselves. And when I think of finding yourself, it is really about developing first that base of trust and truth to begin with, and being able to learn what it means for you to stay within integrity within yourself. So also figuring out what is yours and what did you sort of pick up along the way. So I talk about this a little bit earlier in the book, but there is a concept that the phrase was actually created by a performance coach named Judy Wilkins-Smith called emotional DNA. And it's basically the blueprint that is within us that, you know, informs the way that we think and act and interact. And the thing about emotional DNA is that we don't just pick it up from the people who have come before us, right? Like, we're getting that and building those DNA strands all around us in this moment and doing the same for other people as well. And so a lot of times people can say, okay, I want to shift my self-talk, but I don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people to start with their self-talk origin story. If there's a certain belief or phrase, if you will, that they want to shift, getting curious as to, when did I first notice this popping up in my life? Was this because somebody else said this to me? Was this because I was trying to fit into a situation? And not judging it and not trying to shift it right away, but just getting curious where it freaking came from, where it began.
Yeah.
And then after that, then you can start to get curious around the sort of deeper meaning behind your self-talk. So, okay, well, if I am, let's take a complaint, for example.
Okay.
If I am complaining about something, do I actually like the reality of solving this problem, reality of the shift, or do I just like the feeling that I'm constantly figuring it out, so to speak? When you're not, you're keeping yourself in the loop. And that's all really good information to figure out, okay, well, how do I function? How do I interact with the world? And how do I interact with myself? And then after that, it's really about figuring out what your version of things that we sort of take for granted and don't, I'm going to use the phrase again, don't double click into, like, positivity. Like, what does real deal positivity mean to you? And that's really important, because if you are looking to find yourself, so to speak, can be really tempting to put on, let's just call it a confidence costume, and put on someone else's version of positivity. So it's about redefining these phrases and these concepts like self-love to really make them work for us. And so it's not so much about, okay, well, what do they say or what do they think? It's, well, what do I think? And some people have never done that before and never really been able to get to that place where they can figure out, like, where do I actually want to go and what do I want to bring with me as I go there? Because so often we want to skip to the very last part, the want yourself part of the equation. But you can't want yourself if you don't know who that self is that you've brought along the way. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And it's such a bigger conversation. When, as you were talking, I was just thinking this ties into everything, because we create such a construct, or I believe this at least, in this world that, you know, you kind of have to fit in a certain box, and success looks a certain way, or happiness looks a certain way. And on this journey of life, the older I get, the more I'm, I guess, getting to know myself and realizing all of the things I was trying on in my 20s and in my 30s, they were all things that I thought other people would deem successful or happy or positive or any of the things, you know, like you just explained. And it's just interesting because I think a lot of this accepting yourself, finding yourself, being yourself comes with like getting to know yourself, but also, like you're saying, laying down all these other narratives we've picked up along the way and saying, what is mine? What is someone else's? And where do I want to go with this, like truly, honestly, authentically as myself? Which is, it's not necessarily something I think we can just be, you know, when we're 15, be like, here I am, world, you know, because you don't have the life experience yet. Like, it does kind of just seem like one of those things that might come with some time and awareness.
Yeah. And it's, I love that you brought that up, because people always ask me about, you know, how can we start to talk to kids and teens about this stuff? And, you know, it's difficult work to do, but at the end of the day, it's actually way easier than we give it credit for. The toughest part oftentimes is, number one, many times we haven't made any of this work habit, so it doesn't feel habitual. So it feels new and it feels scary and it feels a little bit uncomfortable because we haven't been in the habit of it. And then there's also, again, the feelings that we sometimes have been taught that we need or should need to feel around the uncomfortable stuff. And so, yeah, it just becomes like this big mess. And I think that there's a way to have these conversations with kids and with teens where it's actually really meaningful and can be really impactful, because even though they're going through different things than, you know, full grown adults are, and yes, their brains are still forming, and yes, they have different life experiences in that point, and maybe not as many life experiences, there is still, you know, so many people, when they think of their self-talk origin stories, they begin in childhood. They begin in teendom. And so even practicing with the kids and the young people in your life, asking, like, genuinely asking, not a rhetorical question, asking, oh, well, where did you hear that from? Or when did you start to believe that? Or, oh, you said that you aren't good enough for this, or that they don't like you. What made you feel that way? Mm-hmm. That is the beginning of starting to practice the habit. And I think so often we want to jump to the solving everything, but if we can view the work of shifting our self-talk less as a stop and start and more of a shift that happens over time with habits, and those habits getting stronger and, like I said, more habitual,
right?
Then we end up setting ourselves up for long-term success. Like, I mean, I am a baby of the 80s and child of the 90s, and this was not the conversation that was happening back then.
No.
But can you imagine, you know, if in the 80s and 90s, if we had these types of conversations that were actually pragmatic and not just pie in the sky,
right,
in our lives, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, because I do think, as you were saying that, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, if I had been taught that maybe some of those narratives weren't real, because in my brain, the things I've realized about the negative self-talk or the narratives, it just appears to be fact to me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like this thing that I'm saying, I think that that is just the fact. That's the truth. But if someone was to ask me, well, where did that come from? and I go back and trace it, it's like, no, that was a negative experience when I had when I was 11 that made me start believing that about myself or whatever it was. And so it would be an interesting thing to start teaching kids to kind of be conscious of what they're picking up as fact, or is that actually true? Where does that come from? So that you can kind of pinpoint, like you're saying, the origin. And I do think that that would help maybe shift some of the narratives as you go through life and have your life experiences and grow and evolve. And you've kind of touched on the optimism piece, which in the book you call dead-end optimism, but you also mentioned casual negativity. So can you talk about what both of those mean and how those things can hold us back?
Yeah. So a lot of times when I talk about dead-end optimism, it's sort of let's call it a cousin of toxic positivity.
Okay.
Dead-end optimism is, to be very blunt with this metaphor, like it is optimism that is going nowhere.
Yeah.
Like it hits a dead end, but there's nowhere for it to go. So it just keeps, you know, I tell a story about carousels. And I love carousels, and it's very easy to just stay on and keep on going. And the thing that happens is eventually, if you just keep on going around on that carousel is going to break down. Mm-hmm. You're going to get really dizzy and disoriented, or people are going to be like, oh, well, that's, what is that person doing? You know, like it's going to feel like fake and contrived that, oh, I'm just staying on these sort of plaster ponies that are going nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's the way that I view dead-end optimism, where it's not necessarily exactly the same as toxic positivity, where toxic positivity will be just love and light over a negative situation. That is a form of dead-end optimism. But I think the dead-end optimism is a little more similar to casual negativity, which we'll talk about in a second, which it's the stuff that we don't even realize that we are doing that we think that we're doing with the goal of keeping ourselves happy, positive. And that can be as simple as people ask how you're doing and you always say, I'm great. And it can be more of like the toxic positivity where you're talking to other people and you're saying, you know, everything happens for a reason, which, you know, it's if I never heard that phrase again, I think there are so many other wonderful phrases that we can use. And it can get us in this loop of feeling like we need to be searching for happiness all the time, but happiness is eating. Happiness is oftentimes circumstantial. You mentioned casual negativity. It's the flip side of dead-end optimism. Casual negativity is the negative talk, and particularly self-talk, that we use that is as automatic and as emotionless as we say the sky is blue. So with dead-end optimism, maybe someone is asking how you're doing and you're really not doing fantastic, but you're like, I'm great.
Yeah.
Great. And that's just, you know, your default reaction.
Yeah.
Casual negativity is saying like, ugh, I hate my body, or, oh, that was so silly of me, without any emotion attached. This often comes up. I notice it with people in, with self-deprecation, and many times self-deprecation can come from a real place, but a lot of times it can come from just a desire to connect with people. And that is a form of casual negativity that, if we're going back to earlier in the conversation, we're talking about the people who say, oh, I thought that I should be over this by now. I think of self-talk like a language that we are teaching ourselves all of the time. And so if in the emotionless moments, that's the language that we're using, that, oh, I hate this, or this is bad, or I'm so this, whatever, then how can we ever ever imagine to shift it in those times when we really do not feel good or we really don't believe in ourselves. If we're practicing it in the easy moments, then that's what we're going to go back to, not necessarily because we believe it, but because it's easy. It's what we're fluent in. It's what we've already been speaking.
That makes so much sense to me. And I think it's so rampant. The negative more to me than, I mean, I'm sure that the positive, I'm not even thinking of examples, but you're right. It's like, I'm great. I'm this. It's like, even when you're having a really hard day, and not that you should dump all your stuff on a stranger, but like,
but you could
there
say,
are
like,
other answers.
I always say mine, if people are like, okay, Katie, like, that's great. But what do you say? People are like, how are you doing? I'm like, I'm doing.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it sort of like makes people giggle because that's not an answer that many people give. So I gift that to your listeners right now. And it's also allowing me within myself to stay congruent and to stay. I mean, it sounds like it's a small example, but that's an example of staying with an integrity in myself because I've got my own back and I'm not lying to myself, you know, back to that study. I am not saying I'm great and then walking away and saying, ugh, well, now I feel really bad because I'm not great. I know that I'm not great. Just if you don't want to get into it, or if it's not the place or time or whatever, an answer to how are you doing, saying I'm doing, or, you know, it's a lot right now or something like that. It can be as simple as that, but I think that it's so important for us to give ourselves the grace and space to meet ourselves exactly where we are over and over. Because what then also ends up happening, if we're going back to the language metaphor, like we learn a language, not just by practicing in our heads, but by practicing with other people. Mm-hmm. And when we practice that language with other people, then they also get to practice the language. So then just becomes this ripple effect. If you are giving yourself permission to meet yourself where you're at, that might give someone else permission to meet themselves where they're at. Like, you have no idea how you are ricocheting off of all of the people in your life every single day. And that I view it as something that is really amazing and incredible. And it could go in multiple directions, but I believe that there is so much beauty and real change that can be made on a personal and a more macro level if just more people did that.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM, let's create.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
I do feel like the more honest I am with others, it's interesting to see the honesty I get back, because I think it's once we set that, like you're saying, we set that foundation up, it kind of gives people a safety net, like, oh, okay, cool, we're doing this. Like, we're not just like going to fuzz through this. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I've always heard this and I wish I had the study to reference, but that our body recognizes a joke or a serious statement as the same thing. So like if, you know, one of my things, and I think a lot of women probably struggle with this, is the way I talk about my body. Like, oh, I just feel fat today, or oh, I feel bloated, or, you know, like these pants look terrible, or blah, 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 whatever it is that day. But I know I've really tried to start changing that, because my body's amazing. Like the things that it does. And, you know, even if I feel like I'm in my best shape or my worst shape, it's still functioning every day in a way that is truly miraculous. Like the fact that our bodies mm-hmm. do all the things that they do is insane, you know? And so really just trying to shift small things like that, because over time, like you don't realize like you're cutting yourself down constantly, even if it's a quote unquote joke, or if you're playing into the joke, like, oh, I'm just crazy. That's another big one I hear with women is like, oh, mm-hmm. she's crazy or whatever. And it's like, no, she's not. She's having a reaction or a feeling or something. And I just don't like that yeah. word.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much historical, I mean, that's like a whole other podcast, but there's so much like totally. Historical context around that, right?
About yes.
like the hysterical woman.
Yes.
And, you know, women like being put into hospitals and being institutionalized for getting their periods, for yeah. having feelings, for being honest. I mean, there is so much that if we really, really were to zoom the lens out, mm-hmm. we'd be like, oh, of course, so many of us are in the position we are right now when it comes to our self-talk, because this isn't just something that we one day woke up with.
No,
this
is
the environment that we were born into that has been built over, you know, decades, centuries.
Oh yeah. It's the same for men. It's just different narratives.
Exactly.
But yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. And I talk about this a ton on the podcast, that the listeners are probably like, oh, here she goes again.
But, no, but I'm hearing it for the first time.
Yeah. But, I think that it all ties in the way we're talking to ourselves and the narratives that we say in general. Like the big place that I've noticed it in my life is when I really started to switch narratives around dating. Like the discussion between my friends is always, there are no men in Nashville. Men suck. Men, you know, just like those kind of negative things. And I just one day was like, I'm not going to believe that anymore. And mm-hmm. I'm going to start saying, there are good men out there. There are men who are willing to do whatever it is that I wanted or whatever it was. And the more that I said it, it was just so interesting to watch what I was drawing in. And it completely changed. So I can only imagine if we're doing that to ourselves constantly, if we change the narratives within ourselves, like what kind of things we're attracting and bringing into our lives with the shift of the narrative.
I love that you just brought that up, because I think that that's something that many of us have said at yeah. some point in time, right? But that's such a great example of you shifting, because I'm sure that you have, whether they are friends, relatives, colleagues, I'm sure you know some great men, period, yes. in yes. your life. So you saying that to yourself, that's, you're telling yourself something that you already believe. But what I hear is you not only telling yourself that, but you deciding that you are going to then look for it. So the subtext that I hear is, there are good men, so I'm going to go find them.
Yes.
And that is like the perfect example of a way to make a shift that is sustainable, because you are starting with that seed of, well, yeah, there are good men out there because I know them. They might not be available to me right now to date. I might not want to date them. But there are good men out there versus I think sometimes people can say things like, you know, my person is coming to me. They will be to me soon. And that can be really hard because if you don't have something in your life that is starting that little seed of belief, it doesn't have to be huge, but if you don't have that seed of belief that's started, which I think with that phrase in particular, that can be really hard for people, then it's going to feel really tough and really, 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 really discouraging. You're saying this to someone who did not like to date whatsoever. Yeah. And actually, my husband and I met when we were on one of the dating apps, and I found a loophole in the app where I could start to block people. So it was people that I hadn't been matched with yet, that they were just, you know, if the app was matching me with maybe 98% and above a perfect fit, if you will. These were the people who were 98% below 98%. Okay. So I was like, well, if I just cycle through these jokers, there's going to be no one on this app for me to talk to. And like, I am working the system. So I was just blocking. And I mentioned this story in the book. I got to my husband Jeremy's profile and I had this feeling that was just this objective feeling of, oh, I know him. Mm. And I had never met him in my life. I obviously know that now. But I was in a place where after being single for a very long time and after going on some not great dates where I was just like, this is not for me. I was like, I'm not getting into something unless it's really something that I want to get into, unless it's really, really worth my while. Because I have other wonderful things going on in my life. Like this person needs to enhance my life more than anything. I'm not looking for someone to complete me. I'm looking for a teammate. And like, I know those exist because I have friends and family members who have that type of relationship with their partner. And also like, I know that it's a little harder to find that person, but I don't really want to go out and seek them out. So I'm just going to cycle through these people. And it's so funny because when he popped up on the app and it actually turned out that we did have a very odd mutual connection where his older brother was my ex-boyfriend / friend's best friend growing up when they were kids. So I texted my friend and I was like, so what do you know about this Jeremy person? He's like, a lot. That's Josh's younger brother. But I had that sense of objectively, oh, I know him. Oh, this, like, you should look into this. And I couldn't ignore that. I mean, even if I wanted to, I couldn't ignore that, but it wasn't fueled by any other sort of narrative that I had going on in my life. I just knew that I was looking for someone to enhance my life and whose life I could hopefully enhance. And I was like, well, when I feel something, I'll feel something. And when I don't, I'll don't. I won't. And so I felt something and I followed that feeling. I feel like dating is a really, really great, not always the easiest, but a really great example of places to shift your self-talk, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because
there's so much self-worth stuff that's tied into all of that.
Oh, yeah. When you were saying the thing about the subtext behind, well, there are good men out there, and changing that narrative, the subtext would be, and I deserve that. And I am worthy of that. You know, like it did tie back into my own relationship with what I thought I was worthy of, which again, ties into my negative self-talk. And where did that narrative come from? And really diving into all of that with my relationship with myself. And once I did shift those things, the things that I were drawing in, just as far as the guys that I was dating, was completely different. Like just completely. It's just so interesting how much of our outer world really is a projection of what's happening internally.
Yeah. Do you think that that was mostly because of, you know, what we've talked about? Or do you think it's partially because of like the, I forget what the actual study is, but like when people talk about seeing the color red, if they say, okay, the color red is everywhere, then the only thing that you see is the color red. Like, I wonder, is it because you were looking for those people? Or do you think that it was, you know, that was what you were attracting, or like a little bit of both?
I would say probably both, because I mean, for me, it's, I'm just such an energy like person. I believe so heavily in that everything is energy. And I know that there have been times in my life where I just really have believed, and this was because of certain experiences, but I had a really bad relationship with men and like did not like them, felt very angry or betrayed or whatever it was. And so the more I carried that narrative, even if I would try to move out of it, I was just having the same experience over and over, mirrored back to me, you know? And I don't know if that's subconscious or if it's, again, like you're saying, like we just draw in whatever it is we're focused on. But the minute I changed the narrative, and a lot of that had to do with the narrative with myself, it really did shift my whole entire dating experience.
Yeah, I love that. I'm so happy that you shared that story.
Well, we did talk about the book, but I want to talk about, you have a podcast too that we mentioned at the beginning. It's called The Wantcast. So tell the listeners what they can find on Wantcast.
Oh, they can find, well, first of all, they can find 8 years worth of
podcast. It's a long-standing podcast, by the way.
It is a freaking long-standing podcast. And yeah. I will say, I don't know if anybody who's listening is interested in starting their own podcast, but I will say when I first started The Wantcast, I was working a full-time job. I was also teaching fitness before and after my full-time job. I was also, you know, I had just launched Want again in 2015, and I looked at my schedule and I was like, okay, what is going to be able to be sustainable? Yeah. I started with the long view, and I started by publishing every 3 weeks because I was like, this is, I'm not going to be able to do every single week. And I actually don't think I'm going to be able to do every other week, but, but every 3 weeks sounds good. And over the course of those 8 years, the cadence has changed. But I think that I have always put a priority on, I want to be able to give people the most quality, most like robust set of tips, tools, motivation, inspiration possible to shift their negative self-talk and to move forward fearlessly in their lives through, you know, solo episodes that I do, amazing, incredible guests that we have on the Wantcast. And I found that the times during which I changed the cadence, or changed, honestly, really anything about the podcast based on what I saw other people doing to sort of fit into the podcast space, that's when the quality from, and you know, maybe other people didn't notice it, but I noticed and I felt it. I felt like the quality was either starting to decline or it was sort of at that tipping point. And I was like, no, there is no way, I am not sacrificing this. And so if you go to the Wantcast, you know, we just released episode 164, which for 8 years, 164 can be like, people might be like, oh, there's only 164, but it's because it's gone on and off. And I think that whether it's a podcast or anything that you want to bring to life that has meaning for you, it's so important to really get clear on how you want to affect other people and what you want to give to other people and what you need to do to get that feeling that you want to feel both within yourself and with other people. So I know you didn't ask about the scheduling and
it matters though. And I think it does. It's the whole part of knowing yourself, again, circling back to that piece that we were talking about, knowing yourself, trusting yourself, really listening to what will work for you and being authentic and true to yourself. I think that's huge.
Yeah. It's, you know, and I think that the best part of that is that my dad once described integrity to me as being able to come home at the end of the day and look at yourself in the mirror and say, I stayed true to myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that something that is just so important to me from a personal level, but also an interpersonal level, is being able to make those decisions and stay true to those decisions in the big moments, but in those micro moments that are true to the intention and true to the impact that I hope to have, and constantly working to make that not a Venn diagram, but a circle. And I think that that is something that it's very easy. I mean, published a book. It is very easy in book publishing to get very wrapped up in what you think you are supposed to be doing in whatever project or field you are in. But the more you are out loud, the more it gives permission, like we talked about before, for others to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And so we end up creating way more of an impact than we even realize just by staying true to that core mm-hmm. of self.
Mm-hmm. To me, that's just practicing what you preach. So good on you.
Oh yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I do my best. I don't always get it right because, again, I am a human and not a robot.
Right.
But I think that the good part that I'm probably like the most proud of, or one of the things that I'm most proud of, is that I really do work to catch myself in the moments when I maybe don't practice what I preach. And I really do my best to either avoid that shame spiral, so to bring it back to the beginning of our conversation,
yeah.
or saying, okay, you're spiraling. What's the information underneath? And yeah. maybe that information underneath is, oh, you didn't do something that felt like you. That's mm-hmm. great information to have.
Yeah.
Because then next time I'm in a situation like that, then I'll do what feels like me and see what yeah. happens then.
Yeah.
So I really do try and stay true to that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Of course. I'm going to put the link to that podcast and the link to the book in the description of this podcast. But if people want to stay in touch with you or follow along on your journey, Katie, where else can they find you?
Yes. So they can find the book at wantyourself.com. It is, as they say, available wherever books are sold. Also, you can request it at your local library. They can find me on social media. I'm everywhere at Katie Horwich. That's Horwitch, just my name. And then they can also find me on the Wantcast, wherever they listen to podcasts. They can find me at katiehorwich.com. And then they can find Women Against Negative Talk, Want, at womenagainstnegativetalk.com. And that's sort of the hub for all of the tips, tools, resources. And it is a wonderful, fulfilling place to be, at least for me. So I hope it is for other people as well.
Like I said, I'll put all of that in the description of the podcast for you guys, so you have easy links to it. Katie, thank you so much for being here.
This was absolutely wonderful. I am so, so thrilled to be here. And I am just so thrilled that, on a very personal and selfish note, I'm so thrilled that we're now connected.
Yes, same. Thank you guys for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast with Kelly Henderson, where we believe everyone has a little velvet and a little edge. Subscribe for more conversations on life, style, beauty, and relationships. Search Velvet's Edge wherever you get your podcasts.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.